This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I'm so happy that this half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson, but my legal eagle, Bill Larson, couldn't be here today. He's off soaring somewhere around the world. But I have a lovely extra eagle here, Justin Miller, who's from Larson & Larson, and he's going to talk to us today about some interesting things about what? Hi, Justin.
Good morning, Patsy. I'm here to talk about the difference between plagiarism and copyright, which I think is an issue that people often confuse and misunderstand.
Okay, well, that sounds great. And don't you love his voice? It's really great. Okay. Okay, Justin, you know, just before I start, I want to say one thing to everybody out there. I want you today to buy Sebastian Roberts' book. It's called Dragonfly. It's available on Kindle for just $2. Now, you know, I recommend books all the time, but this one is particularly timely. It's so clever. First of all, Sebastian thought of this long before this current political season, but it is back in 2014. It is the perfect book for this time of the year. And it opens up on November 6th, 2016, with the election of a new president. But it is so much fun. It's a fun read. It's so timely. And to think that Sebastian was way ahead of all of us. And it's just a fun read with a lot of twists, clever plot twists and turns. And for $2, I mean, this is such a bargain. So get it on Kindle. Read the book, just enjoy it, and then write a nice review for him, because I think, you will see. Okay, I'm going to say this because I did mention to him, when you go to Amazon or where Barnes & Noble to order the book, you will see that the cover is rather plain, and it's just got a dragonfly on it. And you'll say, why is it so plain, and why do we just have a dragonfly? Well, get the book, and you'll find out. And it's just so much fun to read. So I highly recommend this book. It's a perfect book to read at this time of the year. So now I'm back to Justin. Justin, tell us about what you have for us.
Sure. So plagiarism and copyright, I think, are two issues that people confuse. They both have to do with copying the works of another or using works of another without attribution. But the issues are different. So plagiarism is something that we've all heard about, whether we were in a college-level writing class or in middle school as we had to do research for a project. But plagiarism is an ethical concept. It's not a legal concept, as differentiated from copyright, which is a legal concept. So plagiarism is this idea that you shouldn't use the works of another without attribution. You shouldn't take the work of someone else and try to pass it off as your own without telling everyone, your readers, where the work comes from.
Okay. And I think Vice President Biden did that once.
There, I think we've all probably been guilty of it inadvertently, because the test for plagiarism, it varies, of course, because it's enforced by colleges and other institutions, so everyone has a bit of a different test. But oftentimes it can be using, you know, as few as five or six words that are identically ordered from another publication, another book, another blog post, without providing attribution to the author and passing it off as your own. And the interesting thing is that it can be something that even the original author may not want. So, for example, copying a portion of a Shakespeare play and claiming it as your own, or failing to cite William Shakespeare as the original author, would oftentimes constitute plagiarism, even though, of course, William Shakespeare's plays are public domain and anyone can read them or write them or copy them. It's not an issue.
To be or not to be a plagiarist, that is the question.
That is the question. And it came up recently in a case where a student from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology was dismissed or expelled just before her graduation from her master's degree program, because she was tasked with writing a short paper, a five-page paper on the movie The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, and her professor discovered that she had taken portions of sentences, not even entire sentences, but a portion of one sentence was copied word for word from a Wikipedia article and another couple sentences that came from another article on the internet, and that was decided to be plagiarism. And she had a hearing in front of the school. This is all non-legal. This is just the school's procedures. The school had a procedure. They had a hearing. They decided that she seemed unremorseful, in addition to having copied something without.
Okay. Yeah, you always have to be really sorry when you get caught.
Yeah, she apparently was not very sorry. Yeah, at least according to the to the court. It sounded like she didn't seem very worse. What seemed to be actually the main reason for the expulsion, but she plagiarized and they kicked her out. And she brought a case in Illinois State Court, and the court held for the school, and it went to the appeals, and the court again held for the school. And the issue there is really that it's not a legal issue. The court said, look, the school did what they said they were going to do. They gave you a hearing. They reviewed your case, and they decided against you. And that's that. There is no other outside law to apply. You know, it's not a copyright issue. It's just whether or not the school did what they said they were going to do.
Now, when we're talking about plagiarism, what's the difference between plagiarism and infringement?
So copyright infringement, copyrights are less about attribution and more about control. So the reason that you register a copyright on a written work or on a photograph or on a painting is so that the holder of the copyright, which may or may not be the author, the holder of the copyright can decide how it is used, what form it appears in, how the books are sold, whether portions of it can be used in different ways, whether a movie is made out of a book. Those are things that the copyright holder wants to be able to control. And so you can infringe on a copyright even if you tell the reader where the portions came from. Just because you say, well, this I copied this from a book doesn't mean it's not copyright infringement, because it is outside, what you have done is outside of the control of the original copyright holder.
Well, when you're guilty of plagiarism, one of the things that many writers, of course, are also bloggers. They blog a lot, and they are out there writing all the time about things that they've heard about. So what happens? I mean, it's pretty scary that you might use somebody's words.
Yeah, so the interesting thing is, as a general rule, we don't have to worry about plagiarism, because, to use your blogger example, if you're an independent blogger and you're copying something from someone else without attribution, right, which is plagiarism, there's no one to hold you accountable for that. The courts don't care. It's not against the law. I think really the biggest risk is if your readers discover it, you will lose credibility, because at that point they realize you haven't really written anything. You've just copied the work of someone else.
So, okay, this is it. But it is sort of scary when you think about it, that you read something and you think you can use it.
Well, yeah, and I think it's a good reminder that of two things. First of all, that the best work is always rephrased, right? Copying something from somewhere else is probably not the best way to go anyway. I mean, you should really take it and make it your own by rewriting it. And to realize that just as you may wish to have control over the content that you create, the content that you are pulling from may also want to be controlled by the original author. And so copyright is always a concern. There's a famous J.K. Rowling case, which is a copyright infringement case, where a third party came out with a book that was the Harry Potter dictionary, or the Harry Potter encyclopedia, rather. And she went through all the Harry Potter characters and who they were and what they did. And that ended up being a copyright dispute with J.K. Rowling, because those are her characters, right? And she wanted to have control over the dissemination of that information. She wanted to be able to decide when and where she shared the Harry Potter universe with others.
And did she win?
J.K. Rowling, well, aside from the fact that she is probably better funded, she did have a very good copyright case against this other entity who made the encyclopedia. So, no, I believe that the Harry Potter encyclopedia is probably in scarce supply at this point, because I believe it was decided that she should not be made anymore.
Yeah, well, you don't want to really fight with J.K. Rowling.
No.
But it is funny. Recently I had Mary Higgins Clark on my program. And as you know, she's a major best-selling author. As a matter of fact, her sales are so significant that every year her publisher waits for her book to come out, because that's like, okay, that's not just the cream on top of the ice cream sundae. It's a cherry and the nuts and everything else combined. So when she comes out with the book, but she was. She faced a situation where a writer came along and said that she had stolen actually the idea, not so much the words, but the actual storyline of this writer had written a screenplay, which was sent all over Hollywood at the time, shopped around, as we say. And the author said, oh, well, Mary Higgins Clark stole my story idea.
And that comes up a lot. There's a lot of copyright cases about that. And, you know, whether or not it's copyright infringement depends largely on what it is that was taken, you know, what it was that was the idea. There's this concept in copyright law called sens affaire, which is it's a French phrase, so I'm not going to pretend that I know how to translate it. But the idea is that something must follow from something else. So, for example, if you're writing a book about a family during, you know, war-torn era of Europe, and the father has no job and the children are ill and all of those things, and you file a copyright for a book that has that story, and someone else writes a similar story where there's a war-torn family and the father's poor and all of that, they may claim that you have taken that idea, that you have taken this idea of this impoverished family in a war-torn area. But it's a requirement, and that is what a family looks like in a war-torn area. You didn't come up with that idea. It is required. That is the way that it would be. So you don't get protection for that. You only get protection for the way that you had written. In this case, the copyright protection would be very minimal. It would be the dialogue between the parties, right? Maybe their names in combination with the dialogue. But it's very hard to protect. It's very hard to protect an idea. It's difficult to say that storyline has never existed before, and that it was totally yours.
Yes. Well, of course, this is what happens. One needs to have a lawyer, because even somebody as big as, well, sometimes even the bigger you are, the more people want to sue you. And obviously, as Mary Higgins Clark has said, I never read anybody's script. I never signed anybody's script. Nobody gives me scripts. I'm not in Hollywood. I live in New York. I don't go to Hollywood. She was like completely amazed that she would be accused of reading somebody's script in the first place, because I don't think she reads people's scripts. And then the idea that somebody would have told her about it, she just, you know, couldn't fathom where the writer got that, you know, idea. It was a story about something that, you know, you might have been inspired by something in the newspaper, but everybody could be inspired by that same, you know.
Well, and it is a defense to copyright infringement as compared to patent and trademark. You know, if you're locked in a room and you write a book, and I'm locked in a room and I write a book, and our books turn out to be the same, the fact that you created it independently can be a defense to copyright infringement, because it protects the creative aspects. And if we both create the same thing but independently, there's no taking. I haven't taken anything from you. We just happen to think the same way. You know, of course, logistically, the closer two things are, the harder it is to argue that you had never seen the other one. Yeah. But you kind of lose a little bit of credibility. But that is a defense, that you just both people see the same thing. And to your point, I don't think it's uncommon for people to write things both inspired by events, right? So we've had, you know, we've entered a different era of war right now, and a lot of books come out that are related to those things, and they're going to have similar
9/11,
themes. Yeah,
so many books were inspired by the tragedies of 9/11 from different aspects, but you know, often family tragedies. And it wasn't that anyone stole from the other person, but they all had their stories.
Exactly.
And it just opens up an event like that, whether it's a terrorist thing. I'm sure we're going to get tons of books about Orlando. Mm. And people, you know, were thinking along the same lines at a certain point in time. And so it's really hard to say, you know, that somebody came out with the idea, you know, without... attributing it to somebody else. So it's,
exactly.
Yeah. So it is a thing to think about. So plagiarism, you cannot sue.
That's correct. No, there's no legal action for plagiarism. It's only enforced inside of institutions to maintain a level of quality and to make sure students are actually doing work.
And I would warn students that yes, they do. They do now have all these computer programs that they can run your work through. And I think they do it now regularly, on a regular basis. It's so easy and cheap for the universities to have these computer programs that they just catch everything.
Well, it's actually in the case. There's a program called Grammarly.
And yes, I like Grammarly.
They provide it to their students, and they say, hey, run your papers through this before you turn it in. And one of the kind of bad facts for her was that this student had run all of her previous papers through Grammarly to check for plagiarism, but she hadn't run this paper. The implication that maybe she didn't want to find out whether there was too much in there and whether it constituted plagiarism. Maybe she just forgot. But
that's a bad sign. The poor thing. Well, this is what happens, and I think we had a recent case in Brazil, when you don't exactly stick with the truth, it can hurt you.
Yeah, and it comes up, as you said, in this age of the internet, when it's so easy to copy text and to check things. That first of all, it's easy to plagiarize because it's easy to pull somebody else's work. You don't even have to rewrite it. You can just copy and paste it. And second of all, it's easy for everybody to check your work, you know, because it ends up, you end up with published speeches and all of that, and everybody can figure out if it has come from somewhere else.
Well, I want to tell everyone, mark your calendar on September 8th. Bill Larson, my legal eagle, and I are, we're going to be speaking at St. Petersburg Main Library. And we're going to be talking about some of these cases that have come up, and we're going to talk about, of course, he's going to talk about plagiarism. We're going to talk about specific cases, and it's amazing. One of the cases that we're talking about is a case where a very nice Mormon girl wrote a very nice love story, and then somebody came along and said, "Oh, I like that story," and copied the whole thing. Just changed the from first person, from third person to first person, and next thing you know, and just added a little sex for fun. And next thing you know, this poor Mormon girl is facing the horrific experience of being accused of writing pornography. Well, of course, that that sort of threw her for a loop.
Wow.
I think 25 pounds later, after she went sort of on a crazy eating binge, she came out of her room and realized that she needed a lawyer.
Well, and that's one of, you know, that's one of the things that copyright helps with, is that creation of what's called derivative works, so works that are related to your original work. Because, you know, artists and authors are oftentimes protective of what it is they have created, and they may not want it to be used in an adult style, or a painter may not want his paintings printed on wall tile, you know, or on cheap posters. He may want to maintain them as only fine quality prints because he has a reputation and people have an expectation of quality. So yeah, because people can do odd things with your works that you don't want them to, and it can cause harm to your reputation. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so much easier today when you can just copy things and just make a few little changes and think that it belongs to you.
Yes.
So it's something to think about, and it's going to be fun to do this speech with Bill, because we have some interesting cases that have come up over.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, it's going to be nice. So I just want to thank you, Justin. It's great that you were able to come in and fill in today. You've done a great job, and I think it's something, the whole idea of plagiarism is something that you want to avoid. People out there who are writing your blogs, don't do it. Just you know, get up early in the morning and clear your mind and just write from your heart, and then you will avoid all of these problems, because you don't want to be known as a plagiarist. That's the worst thing for a writer.
Nothing worse than that, yes.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming in today and filling in so nicely. And I also, I often say that, you know, I have in the studio with us, Mickey Larson, Bill's wife, came today, and I want to say hi again to you, and Mickey was with us yesterday at the Miami Avenue Book Nook opening, and was that fun?
It was very nice.
Okay.
Good turnout.
Okay, well, I'm so glad that you joined us, and I'm going to be talking about that next Tuesday, so one of the things that I want to mention to all of the writers out there, if you need, the wonderful thing about Larson & Larson, both Bill Larson and Justin Miller, who's here in the studio with me today, Larson & Larson give free consultations. And first of all, Bill has already helped quite a few of our writers. Just by listening to him on the radio, they have figured out how to file for their own copyright. If you need more details or if you want advice, just go in for a free consultation, because it's wonderful to be able to talk to a lawyer. It's always nice to have a lawyer in your back pocket, because you never know. You write a story out there, and next thing you know, somebody steals it. And so it's always nice to have a lawyer that you can just pick up the phone and say, okay, this happened to me. So, Mickey, what is the telephone number if people want free consultations?
It's 727-546-0660.
Okay, and Bill will be happy to meet them, or Bill or Justin here?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, that's wonderful to know. So, everyone, think about it. And remember also, one of the things, if you have And I've got another story coming up next week about this. If you have a particular character, so like you were mentioning that J.K. Rowling's characters are her characters, right? And nobody can come out and do a Harry Potter doll with a on their own.
Probably not. But it ends up being complicated. It depends on how much of the character you want to protect. Like wizards have been around for a while, right? So wizards and magic wands, that part can't be protected. But the name Harry Potter for a boy that goes to a wizard school, that's probably protectable.
And wearing glasses like that.
That helps.
So you want to protect things like that. And so it's always important, particularly if you have a character and particularly if you feel that you're going to be doing merchandising in the future, you definitely want to make sure that you file a trademark. And Larson & Larson can help you with that. And that's a very important thing to do if you're going to be out there selling dolls and characters and T-shirts and all sorts of merchandising material. You want to have your product trademarked.
I agree.
Right?
I agree.
That's the best thing?
Yes, that would be appropriate for merchandise, yes.
Okay, well, that's a good idea. Okay, well, again, thank you so much for coming in to the studio, both of you. I really appreciate it. And again, mark your calendars, September 8th, and everybody can meet the Legal Eagle down at St. Pete General the main library downtown. Okay? Thanks.
Thank you, Betsy.
Okay. Thank you so much.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Arg, matey. When it's time for lunch, when it's time for dinner, when the show's over, when the day's over, when it's time to chill, where do we go? Over to Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub. It's literally in our backyard, right in back of the WTAN studios at 700 Eldridge Street, just north of downtown Clearwater. Just look for the broadcast tower. Nancy's food and atmosphere get rave reviews. The laid-back patio is a great place to hang out, dine, and listen to live music at night. And Nancy's one of the friendliest proprietors in town. And now, Nancy is serving Sunday Jazz Brunch from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Brunch served with Eggs Benedict, crepes, waffles, lox and bagels, shrimp, oysters, and a build-your-own omelet. That's all at Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub, 700 Eldridge Street in Clearwater. That's right where Eldridge crosses the Pinellas Trail between Myrtle and Fort Harrison. Call 446-3717. 446-3717.
Hey, this is Captain Keith Colburn of The Wizard on Deadliest Catch. I love Naughty Nancy's.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back in the studio with a guest, Eli Gonzalez.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, nice to have you in the studio, Eli. You're the CEO of Ghost Publishing, right?
Yes, the Ghost Publishing.
Okay, great. Well, we're also waiting for Karen from Barnes & Noble to join us, and we'll just wait a few more minutes. And meanwhile, I want to talk to everyone about something really great. Yesterday, I saw Gino Bardi. He's an author who's been on my program before, and I just, as I earlier had said, that I thought you should read Dragonfly. I would love to recommend to everyone to get Gino's book. It's called The Cow, A Cow in the Doorway. And, you know, it is one of those coming-of-age books. And really, it's such a great little book. You know, for anyone who read, you know, Portnoy's Complaint or The Graduate, it's in that sort of genre where it's a coming-of-age book, somebody, a young guy going to college, and all of the things that he discovers along the way. And why I love this book, first of all, Gino is absolutely a delightful person. And the story that he has written, it's just fun. You know, when you find a book that makes you laugh out loud, you know you're on the right track. And I was talking to Gino yesterday, and if you look at the cover of his book, there's a cow in the doorway. I mean, excuse me, that's the title of the book, and that's the cow in the doorway. And if you look a little closer, you will see all of the accoutrements of a college dorm, the guitar and all the mess. And but he mentioned to me that some people thought it was about agriculture. Now, yeah, I don't know. Some people are maybe a little bit dense, because when you see this, you can see right away it's beautifully drawn, actually. And you can see that there's a sense of humor in this whole book cover. I love the book cover. And I think it's just a delightful book. And, you know, Portnoy's Complaint was a little bit too gross and a little bit too depressing. And The Graduate, you know, I'm hoping, actually, you know, with The Graduate, it's a, again, there's quite a bit of funny stuff in The Graduate, as everybody remembers from Mrs. Robinson. And I'm hoping to maybe get Charles Webb, the author of The Graduate, on the program, because I would love to talk to him. But since I have spoken to Gino, and, you know, he is someone who just started writing late in life, and he has done a fantastic job. His main character is Tony Vitelli, who goes to Cornell University in 1968. Well, what better year for any of you baby boomers out there who are a little bit nostalgic for the past? This book really touches all the right keys. It's so much fun to read, and very heartwarming, very heartfelt. And I think there's a lot of Gino in this book, and it's just something that I think you should read. One, you know, it's not, you know, when somebody who has started off late in life writing, sometimes, you know, it doesn't have the same polish, perhaps, of Philip Roth, but it's in many ways so much more delightful. Just in the fact that he is writing it with such a sense of humor, such a sense of wanting to tell a story. And I hope that you will get it. It's called A Cow in the Doorway, and it's by Gino Bardi. And I would get it just to keep the book around, because I think the cover is delightful to look at. And it's available, of course, at Barnes & Noble. And I don't know where Karen is from Barnes & Noble, but she probably is on the way. And if she pops in, we will talk to her. But meanwhile, I'm just going to turn for a moment now to my guest, and we're going to talk to Eli. And now, the name of your company, of course, is The Ghost Publishing.
Yes, I am The Ghost.
You are The Ghost. And you have an event next Wednesday at Barnes & Noble.
Yes, I have. Yes, my publishing company, we have 4 book signings for local authors at Barnes & Noble. And it's going to be a fantastic time. We have some great stories from in a couple of different genres.
Let's talk about now the you have 4 authors next Wednesday.
Yes, I'm one of them. So
you're one.
Yes, I'm a best-selling ghostwriter. I've worked on over 70 books, and there's about 32 books in the marketplace that have my name on them. As a ghostwriter, it's up to the client whether your name is mentioned or not. Uh-huh. I had the honor to work on these other 3 books that were there. So Barnes & Noble is graciously allowing my publishing company to bring in my authors, and it's going to be a fantastic time on August 31st.
And let's talk a little bit about the authors that are going to be there. It's Jarmaine
Pichon. She is a Holocaust survivor, and if I may, her story is absolutely incredible. I mean, we've all heard about the Holocaust, maybe saw some movies about it, maybe read a few books on it. But I tell you, Patsy, there's no story like this, from her grandmother being assassinated by a Nazi officer who didn't want to pay for his food. And then she's like 12 at this time. He kills his grandmother, her grandmother, and makes her make him a sandwich while she's walking over her warm, flowing blood. I mean, the book just takes off from about there.
And it's called Undaunted.
It's called Undaunted because that woman, I'll tell you, she's 91. She swims 3 days a week and still takes no medication. This woman is scared of nothing.
Well, so it's appropriately titled.
Absolutely. But the thing about her story, when I heard it, I really wanted to write it. And I'm so blessed that I was able to. So a lot of people don't know is that they started to operate on the Hebrew women and take their ovaries out. They were doing experiments because they wanted to figure out how to get twins to quickly enhance the German race. So they would take these ovaries out and send them to Berlin to do tests on them. And these test subjects, prisoners, were there with no anesthesia, just slit open. And here she is. And Dr. Josef Mengele, the angel of death, the biggest war criminal in modern history, is actually operating on her. He takes out an ovary, and a soldier comes in and says that there might be some kind of Allied raid nearby. So they take him down to a bunker. Before he goes down, he tells the German, a Jewish doctor who's also a prisoner, to finish the procedure. So when he goes downstairs, the Jewish doctor says to the nurse, another prisoner, Jewish nurse, that he says, "I'm going to sew her up and save her ovary." And the nurse is like, "Are you crazy? They'll kill us." And he says to her, "Don't you understand? Our lives are already forfeit for everything we've done. But you have to see when the hand of God moves. God has a plan for this one." So he sews her up at the risk of his own life. He goes to the ward that she's in Block 10 in Auschwitz and gives her medication, has to cauterize the wound. And so much happens in the story. But to make a long story short on this one, just fast forward to 50 years later, she's got 4 boys from that one ovary. And her oldest son runs the Pinellas Pregnancy Centers, helping kids from being aborted.
Fantastic.
And bucking Jewish tradition, he's not named after his grandfather on his father's side. He's named Saul after that doctor that saved her that day.
Well, what an amazing woman. And she's going to be there at Barnes & Noble.
She is going to be there in Barnes & Noble. She's one of the last living Holocaust survivors.
Wow. Wow. This is going to be an exciting event. And do you know the time that it's going to be? It's going to be at the Clearwater.
At the Clearwater Barnes & Noble from 7 to 8 p.m. Get there at about 6:30. Because we're expecting quite a crowd.
Oh, I'm sure this sounds interesting because you have other writers. What are some of the other writers? We have Constructing Success. What
is
that?
This is a business book. Most of the books I work on are business books, nonfiction. Jason Avery is a phenomenal businessman. He opened up his own company, Avery Construction, maybe 3.5-4 years ago. Right now, it grosses about $4 million a year. And he grew that business through the strength of referrals. So he came to me. He wanted to write this book because he doesn't really need to work on his business anymore. He wants to start a speaking career. So we wrote this book on how you can build your business through referrals, and he's a total master at it. And the book has done well. It's a number one bestseller on Amazon, he's launched a pretty decent, lucrative and speaking career. And so it's step by step on how, if you're in business, you know, you don't have to pay for all this advertising if you know who to talk to and how to talk to them.
So it's one of those inspirational type of books that really keeps your mind active on how to get better at something in life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we all want to make money. We all want to make more money. Most of us do, you know, and he kind of figured out a blueprint on how to do that.
And so when tell us how, when you get some like this, a businessman who wants to write a book about a subject that he knows very well, mm-hmm. How do you work with him?
Well, I have a proprietary process. You know, I've been doing this for quite a while. But basically, you know, one of the main reasons people are scared to hire a ghostwriter is they think he's not going to capture my essence. He or she's not going to capture my voice. You know, we figured out a way how to write books for people that their spouse will turn around to them and say, wow, honey, this sounds like you wrote this. And that's because we slow the process down. I know some ghostwriters, they're great ghostwriters, and they'll sit with their clients once or twice and they'll write the book. We're not like that. You know, we meet with our clients once a week and we pretty much slow the process down. And once we've outlined the contents, the chapter of the book and the subtitles in each chapter, then we interview once a week. So our clients have a whole week to just think about that one chapter, not the whole book. And they come to us with their absolute best thinking. And that's what, and spending that much time with them allows us to really capture their voice and put it in written form.
Well, that's a wonderful way to work with them.
Yeah, we enjoy it. You know, we love the process, and life is too short not to enjoy the journey. You know, if you're going to work with someone you know, on something as big as a book, then it's always best if you enjoy the journey.
So the next book is appropriately named Make It Happen.
Make It Happen, Lorianne DeWallace. She is a domestic violence survivor, and she fled here to Florida from a very abusive husband, a very abusive relationship, and she had a little bit of help. But once kind of real life settled in for her, there was really nothing to support her. So what she did is she founded an organization to help women that need that support after, you know, they get away from that dangerous situation. And throughout her trials, she kind of figured out how to bring the jewel back out from some of these women that have been abused, and she's kind of mastered you know, how to bring back to the young girl that they once were, you know, and help them with their dreams and going after it. She's a very, very special, dynamic woman. She's helped I don't know how many women. So she wrote a book with pretty much her blueprint on how you can survive after you've survived.
And now, as you said, with her blueprint, so did she come with to you with something already written down and you work with her from that?
Yeah, she had most of my clients, they have a lot of ideas, you know, but and they're great at what they do, but they're not book writers. You know, they don't know how to construct a book. You know, how do you start a book? You know, how do you do this? How do you do that? So they come with the ideas, and that's why they're the authors of it. Even though we write it, they are the legitimate authors. It's for the most part their content. You know, but we go ahead and we figure out, okay, how should this be disseminated to the reader? You know, in what language, first person, third person, you know, what kind of anecdotes are appropriate. We find statistics, quotes to provide support for things that they say. So there's a lot of research entailed in ghostwriting for someone. But yes, they come with a lot of material usually.
So how long does it take, Norman? How long do you find that you work with a client to get a book out?
Typically, 12 to 16 weeks is our sweet spot. You know, if all goes well, and I have an interesting way of working with them. I don't charge them all up front. You know, no, because I'll tell you, nobody wants to be stuck in a bad contract, right? You don't want to pay all this money for someone to get the first chapter and hate it. So the way we work is at the 30% mark, both my clients and myself and my team, we have the option to walk away from the agreement. Because if they don't like the work, then we don't, you know, then it's okay. But if they're no call, no show to us, and if they're very impossible to please, we can get out. So I've kind of developed a method that keeps us both tied to each other and working our best to stay with one another.
And what is your background? Where did you start writing? When did you start?
You know, I've been in sales for corporate sales for 22 years. I loved to write. I loved to read. I loved to read. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, I'd get in trouble when my mother would wake us up to go to school, and I was still in the kitchen reading a book. Like, that was me. I was an avid reader, and I was a decent writer. But it wasn't until I moved down here to Florida, and my former pastor, he said, Eli, you know, can you help me out? I wrote this manuscript, Zulon Press, largest Christian company. And he says, they're telling me I need to hire a ghostwriter or something. I don't have the money for that. Can you help me out? So I'm like, sure, pastor, you know, let me look at it. And then when I read it, I remembered how he spoke, how dynamic. And then I read this dud on paper. And I'm like, is this even you? So I rewrote it for him the way I thought he would have written it. So he calls me up, Eli, oh, you got to do this for me. God's going to bless you. And, you know, I know pastors. My dad's a pastor. Don't give me that pastor speak. You know, if I have time, I mean, I'll write it for you, but I'm very busy. I'm in medical equipment sales and blah, blah, blah. But I ended up loving the content. I wrote that book for him in about 12 days. And so when Zulon got it, they asked him, who wrote this for you? Whoever wrote this for you is good enough to be on our staff. And that was my first book, Patsy.
Wow.
And you know, long story short, they called me up. We met. They offered me the position. It was about 30% of what I was making. And for you writers out there, you know the heartache it comes with becoming a writer. And so I couldn't take it. You know, my wife wasn't working, you know, and the bills that we have. But I was moping around the house for like 3 months. Man, I could have been a writer, you know. And one day she just looks at me and says, just go for it. I'll get a part-time job. We can cut this out, and just go for it. And that was about 2 years ago. And now, you know, I have a publishing company. Now I'm in Barnes & Noble, and I'm writing for some people that are very well-known sometimes.
Well, that's fun.
It's a writer's life.
So, you know, if people want to contact you, they contact you at where?
Eli@theghostpublishing.com.
And then what? How do you normally start? You bring them in for a consultation and talk, sit down
and
talk?
Yeah, you know, I have four writers that work for me. So I can only take on a limited amount of projects still. We usually cap out about 12 projects at a time. And we like to work with authors who have something other than book sales in mind. You know, because it's hard this day and age to quantify the ROI for a ghostwriter, to hire a ghostwriter, if all you're dependent on is book sales. So what we do is we develop a strategy. That's why we do a lot of business books and a lot of faith-based books, because, you know, if you write a business book, you don't write a book really to sell books. You write a book to find out how to make more money in your business, and we're experts at leveraging that. You know, and if I could say, I don't know how much time we have.
No, we have time.
Okay, so for example, I wrote a book for a financial advisor. He says, Eli, I close about 1 out of 10 people that come to my office. I need to up my closing ratio. I can make a ton more money. If I just close 2 out of 10, I'll double the money I made last year. So we wrote a book, and I interviewed him. Okay, what are you good at? So he told me these things, so 10 things. So we wrote a book, 10 Steps to Find a Perfect Financial Advisor. And these are obviously things he's very strong at. So, but he hasn't sold the book. But what we did was we have the strategy for him. When you come to his office, his book is like literally hanging off his left shoulder. And he's a good looking guy. He's got his face right there. You know, he works out, he tans, and he's right there. And inevitably, as people are there the first time, they're like, is that you? Did you write a book? Now, Patsy, this is all scripted for him, right? So he looks back at the book like if he didn't know it was there. The whole time he's waiting for them to mention it, right? And he says, oh, yeah. And he gives it over to them. Here you go. Give it to someone you know looking for a financial advisor. And then if somebody gives you a book, the polite thing to do is to thumb through it. So as they do that, he says, I wrote this from a long time ago. Let me see if I remember the gist of it. He says something to the effect of, you know, I wrote that because when people come to my office for the first time, I hear many horror stories of the way other financial advisors work. There's no quarterly meeting. Something's not in writing. I mean, I don't understand. So I wrote that as a give back to the community to let people know, you know, so they won't be taken advantage of. And that has increased his sales tremendously. So the point, because the psychology behind this is that he says when they say that, what a book, is that your book? He gives it to them. He doesn't say, hey, $10 for 15, I'll sign it. You know, he's a financial advisor. People know the books cost time and money, but he's giving it away. And he looks
the marketing affluent. Tool.
Yeah, exactly. And but he says, give that to someone you know. So he's implying, because you're with me, you're all set. And then he further says, when people come to my office the first time, I hear all this horror stories, they're there for the first time. And so he closes so much more. I'll tell you, I saw him. I see him often, actually. His name is this. What's his name? Elliot Marr is his name. And I'm allowed to say his name. And the last time I saw him, he's driving a brand new Maserati. And you know what he says to me? He says, Eli, you should have charged me more.
Well, that's good. That's good for you. Absolutely.
And I have stories like that with realtors. Imagine the thing about business. If you're a small business owner, everyone has their website. Everyone has their cards. Everyone's doing the same thing. But how many people do you compete with regionally? that have written a book in the industry that have that level of credibility, gravitas. And when you can leverage that, you make more money in your business.
Absolutely. And I've been telling business people that for a long time, that it's a wonderful tool to have in your marketing bag, that you've written a book.
Yeah.
It shows that you're knowledgeable. It shows also that you care, because you want to share what you've learned over the years in whatever business you are, whether you're an insurance salesman or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was recently talking to a doctor who, is doing dermatology and making women more beautiful. And I said to her, well, you should write a book, because you have a lot of information, and it just will show to your clients that you're at the top of the game.
Absolutely. One of the reasons why business owners are scared to, because they're scared to give away their secret sauce. But let me tell you that is what makes you special. You know, when you write a book, what you're telling the marketplace is that I am so confident in my methodology, my intellectual property, that I can have this out to the world. I don't need to be there at somebody's shoulder explaining why I do what I do. It's good enough to stand on its own without me there to back it up. Because the thing is, once people, your target market, once they read it, they're going to realize, wow, I can't do this the way he's going to do it for me. I may as well just hire him. And that's how you get business.
Well, I think it's fantastic. And on other books, for example, now, like with Make It Happen, what is Lorraine? It's Lorianne?
Lorianne.
Lorianne. What is Lorianne's goal in writing this book about domestic abuse, and what does she do with her book?
Yeah, so Lorianne's main goal is to start to travel and speak to groups of women. You know, so now as her publisher, you know, she identifies places that she'd like to speak at. Now we, as her publisher, instead of her sending a book herself, which looks self-serving, as her publishers, we send the book for her on her behalf, with a customized letter to that person from me, the CEO of the publishing company, stating who she is, what she's done, and we'll call them back in a month and see if it makes sense for her to come in there. Now, usually when we call back, they haven't read it, but they feel indebted to me that I sent the book, so they at least take my call. And all we wanted in the first place is engagement. And it's open doors for her to go speak at places. So that was her main thing. I mean, she wants people to read the book, and it's to just help them get out of that darkness that they're in. You know, and that book absolutely is written to do so. Many authors want to become speakers. You know, it's they toil away in the dark, you know, slapping their keyboards, but their dream is to stand in front of a stage, and a lot of them don't want to do that, especially business owners.
Well, and they enjoy sharing their knowledge.
Absolutely.
And it's a wonderful thing to do. So this whole event is going to be on Wednesday, August 31st, and it's going to be at the Clearwater Barnes & Noble. And as Eli says, get there early.
Yes, yes. And so then my book...
I was going to say that.
Yes.
There's a fourth author. My goodness, we didn't talk about the fourth author.
Yours truly.
That's right. Okay.
So I've written so many business books that I wrote a book on how to write a business book. And it's got everything, soup to nuts, from how to write an introduction so that people feel they know, like, and trust you, how you should start your book off, chapter length, language to use, where I get sources from. I wrote that book to do seminars. And I've been doing seminars. My last seminar was sold out. I thought I overpriced it. Nobody would come, Patsy. I had to get 2 extra chairs. It was amazing.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So I'll be the fourth author there.
Okay. And are these books going to be available? Well, of course, we know they're at Barnes & Noble. But we also have not, I was happy that you showed up yesterday at our Miami Avenue Book Nook.
Yes.
It was wonderful.
Great turnout.
Event.
Yes.
Our goal there is to showcase local authors and to give them a place to not just to show their books and sell their books, but also to do events, to have book signings and to have meetings there to showcase their work, because it's lots of fun, as you said. Well, I can see how much you enjoy writing and how much you enjoy this whole process of helping people get their books out.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. You know, some people make fun of me. One time I described my work as I'm like the midwife, of delivering people's babies. And oh my goodness, my brothers kill me about that. Hey, midwife. But I do enjoy it. I love the process. I love the creative process. I love collaborating. And then, you know, to see the finished product do what it was intended to do. You know, not all books get that way, even with the best marketing strategy. You know, but when it does, I mean, it's just special.
Okay, well, I'm going to be out there on Wednesday to meet all of these authors. Fantastic. And I hope that some of them will want to come on my program.
I can make that happen.
You can make it happen.
And I'll tell you, you know, when I spoke with Bev.
Mally, the owner of Miami Avenue.
Yeah, I said to her, hey, you know, I can probably fill this place up. What do I need to do? She says, talk to Patsy. So we'll have to have a conversation offline about this.
Absolutely, because I really look forward to talking to them and hearing from their side about the process of how they worked with you and mm-hmm. they got their books out there. And it's going to be a very nice event. So I encourage everyone to come out on Wednesday and be there. Like, it starts at 7, but be there by 6:30. And Barnes & Noble in Clearwater is such a nice location. It's a lovely store and a lovely place to get together. So I want to really thank you so much for coming in today, Eli.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
It's so nice to meet you and so nice to have you here. And I just want to remind you, we're coming up toward the end of the month, and this is the time that you should be thinking about jumping in and doing Irene Goodman's auction. She is a literary agent, one of the best in New York City. On the first of every month, she does two auctions for a critique. And you cannot get a better critique in this world than from Irene. And so if you want to see what the requirements are, what you have to send in once you win the auction, go to her site. It's called IreneGoodman.com. And all the money that she raises from these critiques go for charity to help the blind. And, of course, we all as writers know that we want everybody to have good eyesight. And so that's why she's interested in this is a very personal journey for her that she wants to help end blindness. And so the auction is well worth it, and you get a detailed critique from one of the best people in the agency. So make sure that you do that. And meanwhile, I've got some wonderful guests coming up. And in September, I've got Mike Resnick coming back on, my absolute top favorite sci-fi writer. And he's got a lot of suggestions for you science fiction writers out there. So this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm just wishing you a great weekend. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper. Isn't that right, Eli?
Absolutely.
And to hear them spoken on stage or screen. So join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Just meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. And have a great weekend. Bye.
WTAN, Clearwater, Tampa Bay. WDCF, Dade City, Tampa Bay.